Hi, Flaunt Squad. Hey, how are you doing? I just had a conversation with Dana Ayers. She doesn't know this, but I'm going to let her know this right now, and you should know this. When I first started this podcast, I think she was one of the first guests that I wanted on the show, and it just so happens that we connected on Instagram, so I'm very happy that she is now on the show. Dana Ayers is the author of Confessions of an Unlikely Runner, A Guide to Racing and Obstacle Courses for the Averagely Fit and Halfway Dedicated. The title will give you an indication about what the book is about and how hilarious Dana is. I sat and I read this book in one sitting almost. It was just a morning. I just sat there and read it because it's such a funny book. So you need to go pick that up. We are going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff, her adventurous life, the things she's done, her wonderful races, her wonderful cross training ideas that I had never thought about. You can go to flauntperformance.com to pick up 6 Laws of Power for the Voluptuous Runner. That is 100% free. Going over to flauntperformance.com to pick that up. And let's sit back and listen to Dana Ayers. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
What makes you an unlikely runner?
Oh, gosh. I never ran growing up. I was never on the track team. I never ran a mile until college. I'm not naturally athletic. But I was working in D.C. after college, and I was working at the White House for President Bush, and he was actually an avid runner, and he created a 5K race just for White House staff, and so I literally did it because how can you say no to running with Secret Service agents? So that's how I ran my first race, is just because it seemed like a novel experience, and I kind of got hooked after that, and I kept running races and found myself actually being a runner.
That first 5K, did you train for that? Did the Secret Service take you out to train? How did that work?
I did not train. I was very slow. I had to walk part of it. I was a lot closer to Mrs. Bush, who was walking the whole race, than I was to President Bush, who was running it. But it was so fun to be part of the experience, and I realized that there are people at all paces. And that's kind of what made me realize that I could be a runner, even though I'm not fast and I'm not this, you know, hardcore, dedicated, super skinny person that's out there running 5 miles every day, you know, that I could still do races being me.
What does your training look like?
It totally depends on the time of year and if I have a race. So I ramp it up if I'm going to do like a 10K or a 10 miler or half marathon or something like that, then I'll start running more often and longer. But right now, honestly, I'm only doing a couple days a week running, and I probably only go like 2 miles or so, and then I'm doing a lot more strength training right now.
Okay, I want to talk about your strength training, because in your book, you mentioned some very fun cross-training ideas that I had never thought of. I'm like, what is she talking about? Trapeze? But rowing and climbing and trapeze, how has doing these fun, sometimes scary activities helped your training?
Yeah, I like to have fun no matter what I'm doing. And so, like I said, I'm not a serious competitive runner because they, you know, pay a little bit more attention to how they're cross training and which muscles they're targeting. And I was just like, you know what? I just need to stay halfway in shape in order to get through races without dying. And so I feel like anything that you can do that's working your body in a different way is good, because when you're running, you're just working the same muscles the same way, especially for me, because I usually just jog. I don't do a lot of interval training. I'm not doing a ton of hills. So my body's pretty much doing the same exact thing every time. And you need to trick your body and your muscles by doing different things. So, yeah, trapeze, I've only done that once, but it was so fun, even though it was super scary. But it works a lot of different muscles, and it worked my core. I mentioned pole dancing. That's another one, which also worked your core like crazy. It wasn't anything scandalous. I had gym clothes on, and it was a bunch of other women in the room, but it's they were just really great exercises for strengthening different muscles and keeping your aerobic level up by doing something that wasn't just running.
And your book is hilarious. That first page, I said, okay, I can really get into this. Will you? I sat and read your book just in one morning because it was so funny. It reminds me of Diary of a Wimpy Kid. My son read that when he was younger. What made you write the book?
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you. I had a blog for probably 4 or 5 years, and it was because I was posting silly stuff that happened to me. I was posting it on Facebook, and people were like, oh my gosh, if you had a blog, I would read it, or you should write a book one day. And so I just started blogging just for fun, because I have a lot of random stuff that just happens to me. I'm kind of one of those people that just weird stuff happens to. But so I was writing about my whole life. I was writing about my endurance challenges and my struggles with those. I was writing about work, travel, love life, all kinds of stuff. And I was introduced to a publisher through a friend. And I was like, you know, I've kind of toyed with the idea of writing a book one day. I'm not really sure what it would be about. And she asked me what my blog was about. And when I told her all those different things, she was like, well, you need to pick one area to focus on. You know, what's one area that you have a lot of stories? And when I realized I had a lot of stories around struggling through endurance challenges, I also realized that the book could also hopefully encourage other people who look like me, who, like I said, are not super fast, super thin, or even super dedicated, but they could still, you know, finish a race. They could still have these little adventures that I was having. So that's kind of how the book came about. It started with me just wanting to share the funny stories that happened, but then morphing into, you know, I really want to encourage other people who are scared that they don't fit into the running community.
We're not going to give too much away about this book, but I want to talk about some of your random, some of the random things that happened to you. Like okay, let's go right into the electrocution. Let's go into that. What? Tell us about that. Tell us about that.
Oh gosh. So yeah, so that was Tough Mudder, and you definitely don't have to be electrocuted to be a runner. I don't want to scare anybody. But the Tough Mudder is an obstacle course race. It's pretty well known now. It's about 10, 12 miles long, and there's like 26 obstacles. So you're constantly stopping to do an obstacle, and usually there's some form of getting, you know, electric wires involved. So it wasn't terrible. There was one obstacle where I had to low crawl in muddy water, and there were electrical wires that you were crawling under. And honestly, I only felt like a faint buzzing, but some people really felt shocks. And then we were supposed to go through another one where you're running through hanging electric wires. And I don't know why they have this. It's just, you know, one of those things where it's like, let's throw a bunch of stuff at people and make them pay to suffer through it. But the weather got really bad during the race, and there was like a huge thunderstorm and actually a tornado nearby. And so they shut down a lot of the obstacles. So we weren't able to run through the last one. But yeah, I was supposed to be electrocuted twice in that race.
It's crazy. And then you said that they put, you had to sign a waiver, and they put the number on your head so they can identify the body. Just in case.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So when you found out why they had to put this number on your head so they can identify your body, what made you say, okay, yes, I'm going to continue with this race?
I say in the book that how I get involved with a lot of races is I literally look at people who have done them before, and I kind of size them up, and I'm like, you know what? If that person can make it through, I feel like I can make it through too. So I knew friends who had done a Tough Mudder before, and so I felt like, you know, they didn't die. They're not super stellar athletes either. So I feel like, you know, the hype is probably a little worse than the race actually is. You know, I knew people did it all throughout the year, so I knew they weren't actually killing people. But it is scary. I mean, I think that's part of the fun. There's mental torture to go along with the physical struggles. So you have this in the back of your mind that you signed a death waiver and, you know, you could get hurt. But it was just, it was fun in the end.
You are a self-proclaimed slower runner. How did you embrace the fact that you'll be passed a lot when you run during your races?
I think just seeing that there were other people out there that were as slow or slower than me, or that had physical challenges that they were running through. You know, I've seen people that were, you know, fighting to lose weight through running. I've seen people, and they finish races, even if they have to walk the whole thing. I've seen people with prosthetic legs. I've seen people with cerebral palsy. I mean, just like all kinds of challenges, and they're still out there. And that motivated me more than seeing someone fast win a race, because it was watching that struggle and watching people be resilient and fight for it that made me think, you know, I should not feel sorry for myself because I'm slower than, you know, maybe half the race or more than half the people out there. But it's more just the honor of being out there and the ability to get out there that I'm going to do it whether I'm in the back or not. And I'm going to enjoy it because, you know, I should be grateful for that opportunity.
What's the most inspirational story you heard in the back of the pack?
Oh man, there's so many. One particular one that just hit me was a man. I'm in a veteran service group called Team Red, White, and Blue, and it's basically trying to connect veterans with the community through physical fitness. So there was a guy, so it's civilians and veterans, and there was a guy that lives out, I don't know where he lives, but he flew into D.C. to do a 5K with us on the 4th of July, and he weighs 500 plus pounds, and he made a commitment to himself that he was going to do a 5K every month, I think it was, for a year to lose weight. And so he flew out, and he was, you know, the very last one to cross the finish line, I'm pretty sure. But a bunch of us finished the race and then came back to the back and finished with him. And he was walking the whole thing until the end. And then he started like jogging across the finish line. And it was just, I don't know, to see someone like overcome so much, like physical pain, but also, you know, some people would be too proud to do that. Some people would be too proud to get out there or embarrassed to get out there. And he was like, no, I'm going to make a difference for my life. And I don't care if I'm the last one that crosses, I'm going to do this. And so being with him in that was such an honor. And it was just like, it was so emotional to cross with him.
Speaking of going back and helping and supporting others, you really helped and supported the people with the Boston Marathon. What happened? Tell us about that.
Oh, gosh. So the Boston Marathon obviously is like the trademark running event in America. And so when the bombing happened, I think runners felt it even more than everyone else in the country because of that with our community. And the running community is so welcoming. And so to see it hit, it was just like, you know, devastating for everyone who considers themselves a runner. So my friends, my crazy friends in Tennessee, I live in DC. My crazy friends in Tennessee decided, you know, they want to do something about this. That's how everybody felt. Like, what can we do in solidarity with the running community? So they were like, okay, let's raise money for the victims of the bombing and, you know, Boston area, organizations. So then they took it a step further and they said, let's physically run the check ourselves from Tennessee to Boston. And they came up with this entire plan. It took them like 6 months of planning. They planned a route. They had, there ended up being 26 runners on the team, including me. And I met them when they came to DC. So they ran from Tennessee all the way to me. And then I joined them and I became one of the runners from there on out. But it was 1,000 miles total. And we had a runner on the road every second, like day or night, through all kinds of crazy cities and country and weather. and we raised over $65,000, and arrived in Boston right before the Boston Marathon the following year. So it was an amazing journey. And then we got to watch the marathon take place, which was also emotional because we saw all these people finish that couldn't finish the year before. We saw people running for victims. You know, it was just such an emotional time to be there. And it was so great to be a part of that.
That's amazing. You mentioned in the book that running has helped you accept support. That stood out to me. What does that mean?
I mean, stuff like Tough Mudder, you definitely have to rely on other people literally to get over some of the obstacles because you can't physically do it yourself. And so you just start to embrace the people around you. And I pushed a perfect stranger up a muddy hill, you know, planted both hands on her rear end and pushed her up. And I would have accepted the same thing, you know, if someone needed to do that for me. So situations like that where you're like, you know what? Yeah, I need your help. Even if this is ridiculous, I'm going to let you help me. And it's a beautiful thing to help each other. And I also think just being in races with friends and training with friends and having them wait at the finish line, because I'm usually slower than my friends. And so, you know, to have them wait for me to finish or come back and help me, you know, run with me, just stuff like that. I'm kind of a competitive, independent type person. So it's good lessons for me to have, to accept that kind of support where, unless it's, you know, where I'm not like, oh no, you just finish and I'll do my own race. It's more like, no, we're in this together. And I kind of realize that there's something in that that I'm missing when I do stuff on my own.
How has that spilled over to other aspects of your life?
I think with everything. I mean, with emotions, you know, it teaches you to reach out to people for help when you're going through things in life, because you remember those times that you reached out during a race or during training, or how nice it is to reach out to someone else. It's kind of a gift, I think, to be able to support someone else. And so I don't want to take that gift away from anyone else who wants to support me. And I think there's so many lessons in running and in sports that you take into the rest of your life. And that's why I like cheering for people too, along the sidelines, because, you know, the perfect strangers are running in front of you. You're never going to talk to them. You're never going to meet them or see them again. But I feel like in that moment when you're yelling for them and telling them they can do it, that's pushing encouragement into them that they're going to take when they're struggling in their job or when they're struggling in their marriage. You know, it's like you're pushing encouragement into another human in general. And I think that's such a beautiful thing.
Ed, tell us about a time when your patience was tested during a race.
I think it's more tested during training runs. Because races are so fun and there's so much adrenaline and so much energy that I don't remember struggling that much during a race. But during runs on my own, when I go out, especially if I am trying to go farther or go faster, I can get really frustrated at times because I feel like, oh my gosh, no matter what I do, I'm not changing. And I think that's a lesson too, because you're not always going to succeed in what you set out to do. And I think learning how to fail and learning that you can survive it is a really important lesson for life as well.
Why do you think training is more difficult than actually running the race for you? Because it's total opposite for me. Opposite for me. Oh my goodness, I can't stand running the races, but I love the training. Why is it really different for you?
I think because I have terrible FOMO, like fear of missing out. I want to be where the action is all the time. And in a race, I feel like I'm where the action is, and just with all the people around and the people cheering, and there's usually, you know, people in funny costumes or there's bands. Like, I just love the energy in races, and I love seeing people achieve their goals and cross the finish line. But training runs, if I'm by myself, it depends. Sometimes it's really nice to get out there and clear my head, but then other days I just don't want to do it, or my legs feel like they weigh 1,000 pounds and I just can't get into that zone where it's like free flowing. You know, if that doesn't come and if it's just a struggle every step, then it can be really frustrating, I think.
Okay, let's talk about this first half marathon. Because this whole vomit story that you get, that was the first, that was a half marathon, wasn't it? Or was it a 10K?
It was my first half marathon.
Okay. How did you
I have vomited more than once. I have vomited in more than one race. That was the first.
Because you just mentioned the race and how you have all this adrenaline going during the race. How did you have enough adrenaline to start sprinting at the end of your very first half marathon?
I think it's two things. One, me and my friend were both, like I said in the book, we had not trained. So we were out there like, oh my gosh, we're not even going to finish.
Yes, that's another point. You had not trained. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, so that was not the smartest thing. And I've had running coaches read the book and tell me they cringe at that. But we walked, like we started alternating after, you know, we ran as far as we could. And then we started walking a mile and then running a mile and just doing whatever we could to just keep our bodies in motion. But I think, you know, we weren't pushing ourselves that hard. And so having those walk breaks, I think, gave me energy that I had at the end. But the other thing is, I really think we hold ourselves back mentally. And I've said this before, like if I set out on a run and I tell myself I'm going to run 2 miles, I start to get tired right before 2 miles. But if I set out and say I'm going to do 4 miles, I don't get tired until I get close to the 4 miles. So I really think that there's like mental things that are telling you you can't go on when you really could. And that's probably what happened in that first race is I thought I was dying because that was the longest distance I'd never done. But I really had a lot left in the tank because at the end I could sprint across the finish line. Granted, I drank too much water before that. So when I did sprint across the finish line, I turned to my left to slap hands with my friend and then turned to my right and just lost all the water that I had just drank in front of everyone. But yeah, I had stuff left in the tank, which means I was holding back during the race.
The second race that you ran, the second long race that you ran, did you really learn how to harness that energy throughout the whole race? Were you running the whole race by that time?
I don't remember. Often I've ran and walked during races. My marathon, I ran and walked. So I always had that balance where you kind of can keep a reserve of energy. Actually, I think 10 miles is the longest I've ever ran without stopping at all. But yeah, I think I learned to harness energy. I think I always have stuff left over at the end, but that's because I'm afraid that I won't have enough. And so I do always reserve energy. But that's one mistake I think new runners make is they go out too strong or they go out too fast, especially when you're in a race and you get excited and there's people around you. And then they hate life because if you go out too fast, you're going to struggle and you're going to have to stop and maybe not even finish. So I definitely think that's one thing I've learned to do well is to start out slow, no matter how excited people are around me, and that helps.
Has running sparked you to do other things in your life that you swore you would never, ever do?
Yes, absolutely. And I think when I go through challenges too, I was going through a bad heartbreak several years ago. And my friend was like, you can get through this. You ran a marathon for crying out loud, you know, and that it's true. And I've told myself that multiple times when something's hard, I'm like, I got through a marathon or I got through a tough mudder or whatever it was. You know, I can do this. So I think it just teaches you in general, that you're more resilient than you think you are, that you're stronger than you think you are. I said I would never do a marathon, and I said I'd never do a tough mudder. And after you do those things, it kind of builds confidence in your mind. And so then it's like, well, I can't switch careers, or I can't travel to this particular place. And those lessons that you learn running is like, no, I think I could do this. I'm going to give it a shot. So yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about this Ragnar relay. I never even had it in my mind that I would ever even want to do Ragnar Relay. But after reading your story, I said, okay, maybe. But you don't sleep during the night and you're just going and going and going. Explain how that actually feels to be really sleep deprived and still running a race in 25 miles a day.
Yeah. Ragnars can be intimidating. It takes quite a bit of logistics, which I think that's the worst part, because you need to find the vans, you need to find drivers, you need to find your team. But then the race itself is so fun. I think everyone should try one. I feel like as adults, we just don't have a lot of opportunity to have a little adventure. And this is like, just totally breaks up your life and your routine, and you get out there and you do something totally different, and it's a little adventure. So I loved it. the sleep part, I think because of the adrenaline, you know, and it's fun, like your team gets a little delirious. So you're cracking jokes and you're cheering everyone on, because there's always the runner out there. So you're following them, you're meeting up at the next checkpoint, whatever. There's something going on constantly, so I think that helps. And just having the other runners around you. So I was scared of the night run because I was afraid I was going to be by myself, and it's just you and your headlamp, and you're like, I was in the middle of like cornfield in West Virginia, I think, at that time. But there were so many other runners around me that it just became fun. Like, it was like running next to fireflies. Like, you all were just these bobbing headlamps, and it's like, when do I get to do something like this in my life, in my adult life? Like, this is just such a random thing to do. I think the fun just kept me going. You definitely get tired, but it's totally worth it.
I need to know how tired you get, though. I mean, are you revving up on coffee? Okay, for people who don't know what the race is about, let's talk about what it actually is first.
Okay. Yeah, so it's about 200 miles, and you have teams of typically, it's been so long I can't remember. I think it's 6 or 12. So normal teams have 12 people, and you have two vans. And you each have legs that you run. And so you have a runner on the road for the entire 200 miles, day or night. And it takes, I don't know, I think it takes probably around 30 hours to finish, something like that. Obviously, depending on how fast your team is. But everyone gets, I think we each got 3 legs, and they vary in distance and they vary in terrain. So one guy on our team had 3 legs of 10 miles each, and it was pretty hilly. So he was like a beast trying to get through that. My legs were easier. Most of them were pretty flat, and I did like a 5 mile, a 4 mile, and a 7 mile or something. I can't remember exactly what my mileage was. But then you go in order. So everybody in the first van, runner 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you meet up with your second van and they start, and you just leapfrog the whole time. And there's different places to stop. Like, some people dress up in costume and make it a party. I remember we pulled into a big checkpoint where a bunch of the vans were, and there were people just like kind of having a party, you know, kind of camping. And so that keeps you awake too. But then there's other places where you could try to get some sleep. Like, a high school opened their gym to us, and they were feeding us, which was awesome. And then they had the floor, the gym floor, if people wanted to bring a sleeping bag of sleep. But you don't really have time either, because of the way that the legs work, you never have more than a few hours where your van could be stopped, because your van's always needing to keep up with the runners. So some people sleep in the van, but you're not really getting quality sleep.
Was there ever a time you said, forget this, I'm going back to the van and I am not running anymore?
No, I was lucky because I live in this area, and we were doing the Ragnar here, because they do Ragnars all across the country. But we were doing the one here. And so my last leg was actually on my regular running trail. So I did tell myself, like, if I can't do this, I'm just going to call a cab and go to my house. But It was fine. I mean, yeah, you are tired, but you also, a lot of people will have like the Ragnar or the fake temporary tattoo on them somewhere. And so you'll pass other people that are doing the race. And that kind of gets you excited too, because you remember that you're a part of something bigger and it's this fun adventure. And so that kind of gives you energy to keep going.
Dana, this has been a wonderful conversation. How can people get in contact with you and pick up your book?
Oh, thank you. The book is, the best place to get it is on Amazon.com. You can get it at Barnes & Noble as well, but Amazon's probably the best. It's called Confessions of an Unlikely Runner. And you can contact me. And actually, the subtitle is it's a guide to racing and obstacle courses for the averagely fit and halfway dedicated, because that's kind of how I feel like I am. But if I can do it, anybody can do it. So you can get in touch with me. My website is dcdana.com. So like Washington, D.C., dcdana.com. And all of my social media is on there as well. So that's probably the best place.
Dana, I have to ask. I'm not going to ask you anything about your job because it sounds pretty scary to me. I don't want to ask anything. But the Secret Service thing, I don't want to ask. But what is the most adventurous thing you've ever done?
Well, I don't work at the White House anymore. That was a while ago. I'm now a consultant full-time, but I'm a reservist in the Navy part-time. And I'm actually deploying for the first time this year. So that's that's a new adventure that I'm going to have this year. And I'm going to try to see what kind of running I can get in overseas. But the most adventurous thing, gosh, I mean, the run to Boston was one of my favorite adventures. It really was, because we were doing that for like 6 days. The team was doing it for like 6 days. And then just, you know, talk about Ragnar sleep deprivation. We were doing that day after day after day, and we weren't really sleeping that well. We weren't eating that well. But we'd have people come up to us in the middle of, like, Jersey because they had seen, you know, we did media during the trip, and we did social media. And so we were trying to get the word out for people to donate to the cause. And people would see it, and they would spot our vans because we had the vans decorated, and they would come up and give us money and thank us for what we were doing. And so it was just like this beautiful feeling of everybody uniting for what happened in Boston. So I think just being part of that adventure was one of my favorites. But I've had a lot. I definitely want to keep writing books, because I have more adventures that I've had in traveling and in work that I definitely want to share. So stay tuned, and I'll hopefully have another book out soon.
Well, I can't wait. I'm going to be sitting by the store like my son used to sit by the store for Wimpy Kid.
I love it.
Thank you so much for being on Flaunt Performance, Dana.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.